You're listening to
Potluck.
And welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And on this episode, we are discussing our March 2024 book club pick, Welcome to the Hyunam-dong Bookshop by Hwanbo Rum, translated by Shana Tan. As always, Books and Boba is supported in part by our listeners over at patreon.com/booksandboba. where our Patreon supporters gain access to our members-only Discord server, monthly bonus podcasts, as well as the opportunity to help us choose future book club picks. So if you haven't checked it out yet, head on over and help support the Books and Boba podcast. But yeah, let's just get right into it. As always, in our discussion episodes, we will be covering our book club pick in its entirety, which means that we'll be discussing all plot points and twists. So if you haven't finished the book yet and don't want to be spoiled on future plot developments, now's your chance to hit pause and then come back after you finish the book. But with that, let's get started. Rira, why don't you kick us off with our discussion of Welcome to the Hyunam-dong Bookshop with the book jacket description.
Youngju is burnt out. With her high-flying career, demanding marriage, and busy life in Seoul, she knows she should feel successful, but all she feels is drained. Yet an abandoned dream nags at her, and in a leap of faith, she leaves her old life behind. Quitting her job and divorcing her husband, Youngju moves to a small residential neighborhood outside the city where she opens the Hyunam-dong bookshop. For the first few months, all Youngju does is cry, deterring visitors. But the long hours in the shop give her time to mull over what makes a good bookseller and store. And as she starts to read hungrily, host author events, and develop her own bookselling philosophy, she begins to ease into her new setting. Surrounded by friends, writers, and the books that connect them all, she finds her new story as the Hyunam-dong bookshop transforms into an inviting space for lost souls to rest, heal, and remember that it's never too late to scrap the plot and start again.
Yeah, so I guess to start off, what are your general thoughts on this book?
So there's a quote in the book that kind of sums up my feelings. It's, as with everything in life, reading is about the right timing. And I genuinely feel like I read this book at the right time because as someone in my early 30s now, I just feel like I'm at a crossroads in life. And a lot of the questions that the characters pose on themselves, I pose on myself daily. So it was, a lot of this book goes into like what constitutes success in life and the pressures of like society to be a part of the rat race and compete with your peers and get like the traditional job, like, you know how like boomers, they say, oh, go to a good college. And then after going to a good college, it should be like smooth sailing. Just work hard and get the good grades, get the good internships, and then you will make it to a good company.
Yeah, because that's how the world worked for them when economies were like booming and jobs were plentiful. So like, I mean, as millennials, we constantly hear as millennials growing up, we constantly hear that, oh, the reason we're not as successful as our parents is because we don't work hard enough. Like, totally discounting the fact that, like, the world has changed. And, like, everyone's, the idea of, like, social mobility has also changed, right?
Yeah, and also, like, as someone who's, like, peak millennial, as in, like, I was born in 1990, it's always been a problem. And like, because the population of us is like so big, because we're like the largest group in our generation.
I mean, we're the children of baby boomers, which before was the largest group. So it's kind of like,
exactly.
Right?
So like the competition has been always fierce. So I remember like when I was applying to college, like it was like the fiercest race, like the application numbers reached a record high, And then once people got out of college, it was like people were applying to the same jobs because a lot of them, you know, went, a lot of them studied the same major and were aiming for the same position. So it's like, okay, there's like the competition is fierce there. And now as millennials who have their own money, it's like we're competing for houses. So the rat race never freaking ends. And so the book dives into a lot of like burnout culture and again, like what constitutes as a success, what is happiness, and also like the main character, Young Joo-shi, gives up her old life to start a bookshop. And this is also a thing that I can relate to as someone who kind of gave up my old life like three times. And I'm like, yeah, I know how it feels to start over. And I feel like right now I'm at the stage at the stage of starting over again and scrapping my old life. So definitely related to the book a lot. What about you, Marvin?
Yeah, I mean, I went in expecting a cozy read, and I'm not sure if you can qualify this as like a cozy because it's not like, you know, the vibes are cool, but it's not like all good vibes, right? Because there's a lot of, like you mentioned, a lot of like that. I think we classified it as millennial ennui in this book, which is like not knowing your place in this world, doing all the right things, but still not feeling satisfied, and then how to deal with that. And, you know, it ends on a positive note. And, you know, I do like the fact that the book explores like reframing your idea of what success means and what living a satisfied life means. And I think that's really like, you know, those messages really resonate with me as well as someone who has restarted, you know, his life a couple times as well, like trying new things. And the one thing that I definitely was not expecting from this book was that it was kind of like a pseudo case study on running a small business, a small bookstore, because it goes into the nitty gritty of like, here is what a bookstore needs to do to survive and or to generate money to operate. Here is how author talks work. Here is how, you know, inventory works. Here is how, you know, like the only thing that was missing is like charts of its financials for it to be like a just a case study we study in business school. And I actually really enjoyed reading that part because for better or worse, I was like, maybe we can. Maybe we can do this at some point, like open a bookstore. I think that's something
as
that a lot of our...
As someone who has worked at a bookstore, I already know I am not the right type of person to open up a bookstore. Like there's a scene in the book where they get a bunch of independent bookstore owners and the audience is made up of people who are like, I want to open up my own bookstore. And the bookshop owners are like, okay, well, don't expect to make any money. You might lose money and your bookshop might not be open like a year from now. And that is like so true in America as well. And it's just like a reflection of just like our capitalist society of just like, in order to make money, we have to work like a great number of hours. And therefore, there's not a lot of time to dedicate ourselves to our hobbies. And a lot of people like haven't read a book since like middle school or high school. So it's really intimidating to get back into reading. So this, yeah. So like opening up a bookshop is just like, you have to think about those people because those are your customers. So it like the way they like broke it down and the way they were also like encouraging saying, hey, if this is your dream, like go ahead and do it. You know, like just, you know, keep your monetary expectations low. And, you know, there's nothing wrong about keeping a bookstore open for a short time because that time is not wasted. And I thought that was like a really good message.
Yeah. And there's something to be said about bookstore as like a community hub. And I think that's kind of the tragedy of the fact that like independent bookstores are so rare these days, because I mean, a town with a bookstore, like, because I feel like a lot of our communities need a place like the Hyunamdong bookstore to like tie it together, right? Like an event space, a place where people can gather and learn, especially in this age of like book bans. Like, I think independent bookstores are more important than ever. And, you know, what she said reminded me of like a line at the end of the book where Yeonju's explaining why she doesn't stock like bestseller lists, right? And there's this line in that chapter that really stood out with me, which is like, bestsellers are the result of a society that doesn't read.
Yeah, I have a quote here when she says, when she talks about like getting rid of the books, the bestsellers from her bookshop. Bestsellers had always been a point of contention for her. Looking at the titles that rose through the ranks of the top sellers, she was often frustrated. Not because the books themselves had any issues. Once the book made the bestsellers list, it would continue to stay there for a long time. Gradually, she became convinced that bestsellers were the reason the publishing industry had lost its diversity. And it is so true here in America. If you look at the bestsellers list, a lot of it is predominantly white, predominantly cishet male. And, you know, publishing is, in order to work in publishing in America, like a lot of the times you have to have a partner who has like a very high paying job, because publishing does not pay. And therefore, a lot of the authors who have the time to hone their craft, like, they're going to be the ones who make the best sellers list. And therefore, there's like a lack of diversity there. And as someone who, you know, also kind of has the same feelings about bestsellers, I was like, wow, this is a great idea, but also a terrible one, because bestsellers are like 20% of your sales at if you run a bookstore. So I'm like, you're losing so much money. But I just love how like she's like, this is my personality, this is what I believe in, and therefore my bookstore is going to reflect that.
Yeah, obviously this is like a ideal, almost utopian view of how a independent bookstore should be run. And I'm sure some bookstores do run this way, but they're very upfront saying that like, it's not the best business model. It probably is a bad decision, but the fact that is like, you need to do what sits right with you. And I think there's something to be said about, a lot of this book also goes into what it means to be a bookseller, what it means to recommend the right books for your customers. And I'm not saying that we're that resource for people for Asian books, because, you know, we're kind of just reading what we want to read. But there's something to be said about like going to someone and getting a recommendation that you normally wouldn't have read yourself, but something that was, you know, recommended to you with your situation in mind. And like you said, like, you know, the right book at the right time can change your world. And so this book doesn't really have like an overarching plot. It's kind of like a slice of life of this bookstore, its workers and its customers. But everyone in the book does go through like their own personal transformation through interacting with books and the bookstore. And I think this novel does a really good job illustrating why books are important.
So this book would fit into the genre called healing fiction. That's like actually a genre in Korean literature. And, you know, like reading this, like we do relate to a lot of the characters' struggles and a lot of the questions that they pose on themselves. But I think our listeners should, whatever you think about America and its work-life balance culture, it is so much worse in Korea. It is like 5 times worse, because, you know, you're working all the time. Like overtime is, you know, it's a must. And after working hours, you're also hanging out with your boss and your coworkers for 회식, which is pretty much like drinking after work. And It's mandatory too. So it's like you're forced to socialize with your coworkers when you all you want to do is just go home and rest, but you can't even do that. And it reminded me a lot of how like what is it? What my cousin's husband, he came to America with his family for like a short period because he was like studying. And I asked him, like, oh, like what made you like suddenly want to do classes in America? Because I don't really think it's going to be all that useful for you as like a lawyer. And he said, well, this way, you know, I get a break from my job at like my job in Korea, because I like never get to spend time with my kids. And at the time, his kids were like 2 and like 4. And he's like, they're like growing up right before my eyes. And I'm never going to get that time back. So it's something that like I can't have in Korean society. And I was like, that is so bleak. And the way that like my younger cousins too, like the stories that I have heard about them studying in high school, because like once you hit high school, it is so intense. You are not only are you doing normal schoolwork, you're going to after school programs. And a lot of these cram schools, even though there's a law in Korea that says cram schools can't be open past like 10 p.m., I think, like you're still studying until like 1 a.m. And my cousins were saying like, yeah, like I go to cram school, we're there until midnight, I come home, do my like, and then study even more. So they're studying until 3 a.m. and then they go to school at 7 a.m. and they're like, it's nonstop, but this is the only way to keep up with my class, because everything is graded on a curve. And I'm like, that is insane. That is a lot of pressure for kids. And also like the fact that everyone is applying for the same colleges. So you know how like in America, like we have so many options when it comes to higher education. But in Korea, everyone is aiming for the Sky League. So Seoul University, Korea University, Yonsei University. And if you do not make it into one of the three schools, you're considered like maybe third tier for job interviews. So it's like there is just so much pressure. And that's why the genre of healing fiction has kind of risen in popularity in Korea, because people are questioning, like, why am I working so hard? And there's a line in the book where Youngju says, it's towards the end of the book. So Youngju says, I want to consider work as food, you know, like food that is simple and nourishes me. And it's not something that, you know, I should live for, you know. And in the beginning of the book, she talks about how like, you know, like she talks about her old self saying she live by the words of willpower and passion. And as someone who also kind of lived that way, it's so tiring. And you burn out so quick.
Yeah, which is interesting because willpower and passion are also the things that are kind of keeping her bookstore alive. But for her, it's way more worth it, right? Like she mentions at the end of the book that a day well spent is a life well lived. And you can see the difference of like working the work and working on something that you personally love. And, you know, our brains are all kind of rotted from capitalism, right? The idea that like we have to be a part of the rat race in order to have any worth in society. And that's something that's beaten into us by schools, by media, by our parents. And I like the message that this book sends, which is like, it's okay to like do okay, right? It's okay to like not have the high paying job as long as you're doing something that you yourself are satisfied with. Because in the end, that's literally all that matters, is that you enjoy the life that you live. And I feel like even here in the States, we're taught to like suffer now to enjoy our lives later. And we're seeing in real time that later for us is like never, because retirement age is going up. Like people can't even retire these days. So like we're kind of expected to work till we die. And it's like a sneaky reversion of back to like the pre-industrial age of like, we're just serfs for the noble class of rich people, right?
Yeah. And you know, like you mentioned, like, oh, as long as you like enjoy what you do, it's, you know, it's satisfying and like you can be content. And what I really liked about this book is, you know, the message isn't do what you love and everything will be okay. It's actually the opposite, because you have characters in the book like Sungwoo, who is like an office worker turned author, who used to work in coding, and he loved coding until, you know, he got burnt out and then he switched to a different department. And you also have characters who like worked jobs that they were very passionate in. And Sungwoo tells Min-chul, who is like a high schooler in this book, who is like who's kind of going through burnout syndrome and also like kind of like depression. And he says, doing what you like doesn't guarantee happiness. Unless you're also in an excellent environment, then maybe. Sometimes it's the environment that's more important. If you're in an ill-suited environment, what you enjoy can become something you want to give up. What I'm saying is not everyone fits into the mold of finding happiness just by discovering what they like. That's too simplified, not to mention naive. And going to art school in high school and also going to film school in college, a lot of the things that I've heard from my peers who kind of like went the traditional route of like going to business school, going to, you know, pre-med, you know, they would say like offhandedly, like, well, at least you're doing something that you love. So like when you do something you love, you don't work a day in your life. But I really hated hearing that, because it was just so, it's so hard to love something to the, like when you love something too much, it like destroys you. And you know, like what you like, if you make something you love into your I guess like livelihood, it's still work.
And yeah.
And I think a lot of people like don't understand that and kind of romanticize it. And also like it doesn't help that people see the arts as something that's frivolous and doesn't contribute to society. And you know, it's just like, oh, you're so lucky that you get to do something that's, you know, it's like you get to do something that's like so, I don't know, like that makes you free. And I'm like, no, it's not the case. And also it's like very frustrating as someone who, you know, you want to be really good at your craft too. So it's like, you're also pressuring yourself. And that's like a different sort of madness compared to like pushing yourself in a job that like you really don't care about.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's still work, and it's still like any other job, takes more than it gives sometimes. Like working in arts, working in community, you're giving up a lot, and it's going to take as much as you give, but not give as much back, because, you know, we're all still living under capitalism, which means we still have to pay the rent. We still have to figure out how to feed ourselves. We still have to pay our taxes and buy our necessities. And, you know, those of us who have worked in like community organizations, in arts organizations, they weaponize that, like, oh, you have such passion. It's like, so you're so dedicated to literally like underpay you, right? Because you should be satisfied with the work you're doing. That should be nourishing in and of itself. And the fact is like, no, I still got to eat to live, you know?
Yeah, it's still work. I'm still putting in the hours. Like, you should pay me for those hours that I worked. And this is why we had like the writer's strike and the actor's strike here in America, because it's like, just because we're doing the things that we love or doing the things that we find ourselves talented in and things that we enjoy, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be compensated. And I love how Youngju has kind of brought this philosophy into her bookshop, because when she hires Minjun, her first employee, the barista, she says, oh, I'm going to pay you 12,000 won per hour. You're going to work 8 hours per day, five days a week. And that's it. Like, you are not going to work overtime. You're not going to like, the only responsibilities you have right now is just like coffee stuff. And Minjun is like, why are you paying so much for, like, you know, you can pay me lower. Most coffee places do pay me lower. This is a casual job. And, you know, she says work-life balance is important. And, you know, if you are so tired from doing work, how will you have time to enjoy your life? And I'm like, that is something a lot of bosses do not give a shit about. So, yeah, it was just like really nice that she set this environment for him to really, I guess, like, rest and reflect on his life. Because Minjun is also someone who kind of feels, you know, kind of feels shafted, because he did all the things that society tells him that he should do in order to lead a successful life. And I love the metaphor that he gives about how it feels like he is wearing a shirt and he did the first button by getting into a good college, but then everything else, like,
yeah,
like, it feels unbuttoned. And I was like, wow, that that is a mood.
Yeah, I mean, if Youngju is like the older millennial who did everything right, got into the workforce and became disillusioned, Minjun is like the, much like you, the peak millennial who like did everything right and then ended up in a world that ended up not needing him after all. And I think it's, I love that this book gives you the perspectives of so many generations, right? Because you also get the outlook of older, like Gen Xers, boomers, and also Minchul, who I guess would be considered maybe Gen Z, who is seeing like the messed up lives of their millennial seniors and saying, why do I even want to like do that? Right? Like, is it even worth it? And I really love Minjun as a character. I think Minjun was my favorite character in this book, because I definitely related to him as someone who like fell into a craft and decided to like, just what if I became really good at this one thing, right? He started off just like being a barista at this bookshop, but then ended up getting really into like making a better cup of coffee. And that's kind of, it mirrors my own experience with like podcasting, because, you know, started off with something I just wanted to do. And now I have like spent the last almost 10 years trying to get better at it and trying to make it a thing. And I definitely also related to his like conversations with his mom, who like has no idea why he's spending so much time being a barista, right? Why are you wasting your potential?
Yeah, because, you know, he's working a casual job and she's constantly nagging him, being like, you know, like, go on vacation for 3 months and then get back at it at the job interviews. And are you going to do like part-time jobs or casual jobs forever? And, you know, like, I think, like, personally, I think doing part-time jobs, doing casual jobs for the rest of your life, like, I think that's fine. Like, you know, if that is going to give you the work-life balance that you need in order to lead a satisfying life, then go ahead, do it. Work is work. And honestly, like, making your career your sole definition of like as your identity, it's not healthy. And, you know, you get his mother's stress and anxiety because she thinks that, you know, you're never going to find stability and you're never going to be happy. But happiness can be reached in different ways. And I really like the fact that that idea is explored with a bunch of characters from different generations, like you said, Marvin.
Yeah. I also love the fact that his best friend, Sun-chul, ended up becoming like a film critic, because when we first meet him, he's like always complaining about like what makes a hit movie and how the industry is messed up. And he comes back later. Like, I love that like kind of Chekhov's film critic that we got.
Yeah, and it's not like he's like a film critic for a prestigious paper or anything. He's like a blogger. I'm like, I love that.
Yeah.
I love how, you know, he's just like, I have time, this is what I like, and I'm just gonna do it. And I'm just like, that's kind of how I feel with a lot of hobbies that I've had in my life. And you know, as someone who decided to do, like with this podcast, for example, it's like, I like to read, and sure, I guess, you know, like once Marvin was like, let's do a podcast, I'm like, I don't think I'm qualified to do it. But also, like, I read a lot of books, and I am the most well-read amongst my friend group. So why not?
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, you know, reading this, like, book definitely got me thinking of what more we can do with books and boba. And I think those are conversations that we can have, you know, later on, because I think we're at a point where, like, you know, what's the next step for this book club? And but that's a conversation for another time.
I mean, it's kind of what happens with Youngju, you know, like she's just like, I opened this bookshop because I like to read, and I'm like stalking the books that I like. But she starts to like add things, being like, okay, in order for this bookshop to stay afloat, I have to do blogging and social media. Let me invite authors. Let me open workshops. Let me do giveaways. And it's like one thing becomes like 20 things. And that is like totally understandable, because this book club was supposed to be one episode per month,
right?
Just you and me talking about books and inviting anybody else who is in the area to meet up in person. Yes, we used to be an in-person book club. And then Marvin was like, let's add book news to it. And then let's add author interviews. And now we're like literally recording every week, sometimes two episodes a week. And it's like, when did that happen? Like, that happened within like the first 3 months, I think, of us starting this podcast.
I mean, I think it was, obviously the concept was just something that made sense. And I think, yeah, we got reached out by authors and publicists like almost immediately after we launched, saying, oh, would you like to interview this author? Would you like to have this book? And we were like, it took us a while to get into the groove, right? Because at first we were like combining author interviews with book news. We were, you know, putting in book news in front of like book club discussions. But yeah, I think, I don't know. I don't think there was like a plan. It was just, this is what I hesitate to say industry, but this is what like the environment wanted from us. And we had the bandwidth to provide it. So
yeah, with like, it's just so funny, because we started this book club like after I like left Coriam, and you know, I was doing some freelancing for journalism, but I just kind of like felt very burnt out, but also just like not into it, because journalism was something that I just fell into. It was not something that I was pursuing. And you know, doing this book club was supposed to be a respite, and it was for a while, but all of a sudden, like when we were doing author interviews, you know, like Marvin, who had faith in me as someone who like used to be a journalist, he's like, yeah, you can lead the author interviews. And I'm like, I this is a form of work that I did not expect. But I don't know, like it, in a way, it like helped me grow in terms of being an interviewer, and in terms of like being a conversationalist, because that's not something that I really developed until much later on in my journalism career. I started writing because I was an introvert and because I didn't want to interact with people, because I'm very bad at interacting with people. But then, like, doing journalism where you have to be very social, I was like, this is not what I want to do. But apparently I have to just kind of like learn. And then like doing this book club helped me work at a bookstore because now I can like recommend books and now I have to talk to authors in person. And that's terrifying. But I mean, that's the thing about bookshops. It like fosters community as well. And yeah. I really like the community that Youngju built. And I don't know, like it also asks the question of like, what is a bookshop? Like, essentially, it's like a shelter from the world. It is a third place. It's not just about books, because even though she has book clubs, you know, at her store, she also has workshops that are not related to books, and they have yoga sessions. And these are things that just kind of bring the community together.
Yeah. And I definitely love that her customers became kind of like a found family, right? I love the part where they talked about, Sansu, the old man who would come in and just read all the books and leave. And then eventually he became like their go-to bookseller, right? He became like, at the end of the book, he's like a full-time bookseller. Like, he has his own corner of his recommendations. I really like that evolution, because I can...
I do love how, like Youngju and Minjun was like, he's not buying any of the books that he's reading. Like, we should tell him that this isn't a library. This is a place of business. And, you know, because he's reading these books for hours on end, like, they're probably damaged to a point where we can't sell them to customers. And this is like a very relatable thing as someone who worked at a bookstore, because like, I get it. Books are expensive. And, you know, as bookshops that are like, bookshops are third places, but again, they're not libraries, they're places of business. So, like there have been times when I would be working and I would see people, like parents or grandparents, they pick out like a picture book and they would take pictures of every single page so that they could read it to their kids later. And I've had to like step in and be like, you can't do that. you can't do that because, you know, you're it's kind of pirating. And same thing with just like books in general, where they spend the entire day reading and it's like that's kind of a nuisance. But you have characters like Cheongseo, for example, who, you know, she quit her job because she had anger issues because of unfair practices. And she's like, you know, I went to a bunch of places and it always felt like I was being a nuisance and taking up space. But this bookshop, you know, you're always just like, you don't need to buy coffee every 3 hours in order to like have the right to stay. And that's so rare.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely like a utopian bookstore, right? Because even when they confronted Sang-su about like his
he bought like 10 books afterward. And I'm like, who the hell do you think you are?
It just turns out he's like an ignorant Ajishi who like didn't know he was doing anything wrong, but like made things up. Like we talked about this in our Discord, but like this was like a very Karen-free bookstore experience, which I imagine is not the norm for like any retail business, right?
No, absolutely not. But although like I feel like bookshops in Korea, they're a little bit different because they do have hardcover books, but most of their books are paperback, so it is like more affordable. It is just like a different type of market compared to America. Yeah.
Speaking of book recommendations, though, I did want to get your thoughts on the fact that, man, does Youngju love Catcher in the Rye and wants everyone to read it.
Oh my God. I was just like, I'm judging you so fucking hard. Recently on Twitter, there was this question that kind of went viral and it was like, oh, what's your red flags? What are your red flag books when it comes to first dates? And mine was Catcher in the Rye and also The Midnight Library, which is so funny because this book has been pitched as you know, people who love Midnight Library by Matt Haig and A Story of A.J. Fikry by Gabriel Zevin. And I'm like, I really don't like the Midnight Library. It is like one of my 13th reasons why out there as a book. Because I feel like it, I feel like it like romanticizes suicide in a way. And I'm like, that's a big no-no in my book. So like when she was like recommending Catcher in the Rye to like pretty much all of her customers, like, and then she's like, maybe I should stop recommending books that, you know, I personally like, and it doesn't fit their criteria of like, of their tastes. And also like, maybe I should stop recommending books that are narrated by high schoolers who are burnt out from the world, because that's not everyone's experience. And I'm like, yep. I just, please stop.
I just feel like it was like the one kind of inconsistency as someone who was so well-read. I feel like if you're so well-read, you've probably moved on from Catcher in the Rye at this point, like by like 20 years. But I definitely thought of you and your reaction to her, like making everyone read that book.
I get pissed off when people recommend like the same best-selling book or like classic book, because I'm like, is that something that you really enjoy, or is that something that you've been conditioned to enjoy because it is a bestseller slash classic? Like, I love The Great Gatsby. I think it's a great book, but anybody who says it's the best book written and this is my favorite book ever, I'm like, why is this your favorite book ever? I feel like there's so many diverse books out there now where I'm just like, this cannot be the pinnacle of your reading experience. And
it's probably because they haven't read a book since high school and that's all they remember.
And like Youngju, like she is so much kinder than I can ever be, because I am such a judgmental person and I could never. This is also another reason why I could never be like a bookshop owner, because my personality would, it's just not compatible. I am not sympathetic to other people's tastes.
Yeah. What did you think about, like, one of my favorite parts in the book that was a lot of fun was they had a whole like book tea interlude, right? When we were introduced to Sungwoo and how he became a writer, because he had it was a blog or a Tumblr, like something like that, like a blog where he, you know, criticizes sentence structure in books and got into a tiff with a publisher. What did you think of the representation of book tea in this book?
I didn't really consider it book tea. It made me think more about like the writing craft, because the trend, like what is good writing? I feel like it's very dependent on you as a reader. It's very, you know, it's very subjective. And I feel like in the publishing industry, especially in the West, we favor sparse prose. We don't favor a lot of like flowery prose. We are all about show, not tell. And personally, I prefer show, not tell, but not every story needs to be like that. And like the whole sparse prose and like masculine prose, that was perpetuated by like Hemingway. So like when he was saying like, oh, this is the right way to make a sentence, like don't make it passive, make it active. And I'm like, okay, like these are, I feel like this is like good advice, but at the same time, you shouldn't feel like superior. And it's, I think it's just like so funny as like a very judgy person. I was like, I judge people's sentences like all the time. And as someone who used to be an editor too, that was my job. So it was just like interesting being like reading that. I'm like, huh, okay, well, yeah, there's some like good general writing advice out there, but kind of picking people apart based on like their writing style, I feel like it was just like, I'm not so sure about that. And he gets like he there was a reckoning because there was like a moment where he had to like post an apology, being like, I'm sorry for you know, being insensitive and just like demolishing people's self-esteem. And he like really reflects on how he treats other other writers. And I was like, huh, okay. So it's not just someone who's like, I know the best way to write the perfect sentences and perfect prose. And it's like, no, he was humbled. Like, there is no right way.
I liked him as like, he's the closest thing in this book to like a love interest, right? Because he kind of has that romance subplot with Youngju. I did like that it wasn't like the focus of like, this isn't a story about Youngju and her finding herself, right? But I did like that we did get some, like, he represents maybe her, you know, she was able to restart her professional life, like open this bookstore, making and finding, like, you know, a place where she can work on something she is into. And then he's like her opportunity to restart her personal life, right?
Yeah. And speaking of personal life, I really liked Jimmy's storyline. So Jimmy is like the roaster who provides the coffee beans for the bookshop, and she has a troubled marriage. She has a man child of of a husband who doesn't have a job, and I mean, that's okay, like not having a job, but you know, he doesn't contribute to the household. He doesn't cook. He doesn't clean. He is kind of like very much a burden on Jimmy's life. And she always complains about him to her coworkers, to Minjun. And I just really liked how her marriage and her problems were different from Youngju's failed marriage. Because Youngju's marriage was like, yeah, we were really great partners when we were both like working and goal oriented, but I just kind of, you know, like I went in a different direction, and you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And but at the same time, she spent months like being like, oh, was I selfish? Like, I like, was it okay for me to be selfish? And yeah, I just like love the idea of like these two women like questioning like, okay, like what is a healthy marriage? What is like, when is it time to call it quits?
It's almost comical how common Jimmy's situation is, because there are multiple people that I know who have,
I mean, she talks about that too, on how common it is.
Like, have gone through that exact same experience and maybe spent way too long deciding that maybe this isn't working.
And also, like, Korea is, like, such a patriarchal society, right? So, like, she talks about, like, how her aunties and, like other women that she's talked to, they would complain about their husbands, but they'll say, like, oh, but he's a good person. And
I mean, even Youngju's like, well, own mother is mad at her for, like, not sticking through the marriage, because divorce is like the worst thing that can ever happen to a woman, right?
Yeah, it's considered like a failure. And you know, for the people who are not really familiar with Korean society today, right now there's a movement called the 4B movement, and it's like, you know, it's women saying like, we're not gonna get married, we're not gonna have kids, we're not going to even date or have sex because we are content with our lives. And why would we give up our peace for a man who is pretty much going to be like our child and we would have to like take care of them? It's just like, no, we're not sacrificing that. And also, like, if you want us to procreate, government, you need to treat us better. And I love how, like, you kind of get that commentary through Jimmy's storyline.
Yeah. One thing that did surprise me of the book is the fact that we don't really get Youngju's backstory, like, until literally the last few chapters of the book. And I was like,
the book jacket description like tells you right away.
Well, yeah, but I was expecting it to be like, oh, the first few chapters, we'll see how she ended up here, what happened. And at some point I was like, well, maybe they're not going to get into it. Maybe it's all just through context clues. And then we finally get to it. And I was like, okay, it's a really interesting place to put it. But at the same time, it also shows how like it's meant to flesh out the story, but not be the story, which was, I think, a really cool thing that this book does.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good way to put some plot there. Because this is not like, I mean, it's not a traditionally plot-heavy book. I will say that this book has plot because you have multiple characters with transformations.
Yeah, there's definitely
character growth. Yeah, you have development and there is momentum in the book. But at the same time, like, this isn't a book where, like, it's like action heavy, you know? And I love that. This book is very gentle. It's very like, take things slow and just do what's right in the moment. Take one step at a time. And even though you don't know where you're going, you are going somewhere. And I thought that was like really comforting as a reader.
Yeah. And I learned some stuff too. Like I learned about latte dads. I learned about downshifting, which is a really, like, really cool term for that phenomenon we were talking about, which is like taking a break and like slowing down and starting over, right? Like, I really enjoyed that one chapter where they had the book club discussion and it was like a multi-generational discussion on like how capitalism and work culture screws us all.
And I also like the book club meeting with Mincho's mom.
Yeah.
Because she starts like a mommy book club. And there's a moment where she's like, I want us to reintroduce ourselves. Because in Korea and also like in Asia, if you're a parent, you're called like Marvin's dad, Marvin's mom. You're like never called by your name. And she's like, well, in this book club, I want us to be people who have identity outside of our roles in our household. And I was just like, wow,
yeah.
This is like such a great place for these women to bond and have conversations about life and also to, you know, connect with themselves through reading. And that's the power of books, you know, like books that are good books. Give you connection to other people and it opens doors to other worlds. And you, like, if you've been a long time listener, you've probably gotten to know Marvin and I like very well because we talk about our personal struggles and lives through the books that we read. And it's the same with our book club members. Like, we get to know them a little bit more. And you know, when you guys share your thoughts, it's like, okay, like there's like a connection there. And that's a really special thing.
Yeah. And it was definitely cool what the book does, which is up to that chapter, Mincho's mom has been referred to as Mincho's mom. But from that chapter on, she's Hijo, right? We start referring to her to her name, which was like, what's really cool.
Yeah. And I just love how like her ultimatum for her son is like, okay, you don't want to go to cram school? Well, you're going to like go to this bookshop and you're going to read a book that Youngju recommends. Like, that is just like a thing that you're going to do. And I thought that was like a really like rare parenting method that I've seen in Asian households, because it's always just like, you need to study. You need to like... You need to like put 100% effort into everything. But she's like, I'm actually worried about my son because he's just like so indifferent to the world and to just like school and everything. How do I get him to actually like feel something again? And I don't know, like it was just like refreshing to see like a mom character just be like, okay, like, it's okay to live a slow life. And in the end, Mincho doesn't go to college and they use that college tuition money to go on vacation. So I'm like, that's great.
Yeah, it's
like
a lot of money. I love that the solution is go to this bookstore and probably read Catcher in the Rye, right?
Yeah, and like also he, like at some point he was like, do I have to read every single time I come in? And Youngju's just like, no, we don't have to read books that you don't want to read. We could just talk, or you could just space out and watch Jeongseo like knit and crochet. There's nothing wrong with just, you know, taking time for yourself.
Yeah.
I definitely related to Jeongseo so much because of like her anger issues, because it is something that I struggle with all the time. And it was something that I struggled with like for a short time, like working in the entertainment industry, being like, everything is so unfair and blah, 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 blah. And so it's like, I don't know how I can live this way because I'm mad all the time. And just like her journey of like finding a way to channel her anger and to find peace. And, you know, like in the end, like she's like, I have to find a job because money is important. But I think I think I'll be able to handle shitty coworkers and bosses that steal my work and, you know, steal all the credit because, you know, I found a way to make work not my life and not make becoming a permanent employee as like my sole goal in life. And I'm like, good for you, girl. Yeah, do yoga, do that meditation, do the knitting.
I think in this day and age, that's what self-actualization looks like, is realizing that we don't have to, you know, we have to play under capitalism, but we don't have to make it our lives. Like, it doesn't have to, like, we can find a way to live with it, but not play the game that it wants us to play.
I too also tried crocheting after like after quitting and just like trying to start my life over and take a break, but I was so bad at it. Like, I tried so many crafts to like find like a hobby that could be like restorative to me, and it was not crocheting, it was not knitting, it was not gardening or baking or cooking, none of those things. So
yeah, my wife likes putting stuff together, so she's been doing those like little like book nook models.
The book what?
The little like book nook models, like the, have you seen those? Like they're like model kits, but for like a small like diorama that's the size of a book that you put in your bookshelf.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I think I've seen it on like YouTube channels, but yeah, I haven't. I don't know anyone in like personally who does that.
Well, now that we put it on our podcast, it's gonna catch in the algorithm, and hopefully we'll get sponsored by one of those and get some free samples. That's our dream on this podcast, is to just get free stuff.
But we got some comments from our book club readers on this book. And we got some on Discord and also on our Goodreads forum. And on our Goodreads forums, thank you, Alwyn, for submitting your thoughts. And they wrote, they said they read the arc, so they're mainly going off of their notes and memory. And they said, I liked it overall. It was a fairly undemanding, gentle read, but could be quite thoughtful too. I liked the bookshop setting and enjoyed the numerous references to specific books, authors, and reading in general. The slice of life narrative and the emphasis on found family / community, the importance of finding your own space / following your dream, reminded me a little of favorite K-dramas like Would You Like a Cup of Coffee? And I've never watched that drama, but I'm guessing it's kind of like Before the Coffee Gets Cold, you know, the book that we've read in the past for this book club. And they mentioned a piece that was written in the Korea Herald about the pressures to work somewhere prestigious, tick all the right boxes, terms of marriage, which are all social themes that we talked about in our discussion today. And they said, Youngju works well as a depiction of a woman who's trying to walk away from all that. I thought the character of Minchul and his mother were also effective in highlighting the potential destructiveness of wider social expectations. Definitely agree.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like, I was going expecting something similar to Before the Coffee Gets Cold, like the type of like, I guess, Japanese cozy book where it's like, here is a business and here are stories of people that come in. But I'm not mad that this book turned out to be more of like you mentioned, like a book about healing and about community.
As I've gotten older, I've gravitated more towards like slice of life stories rather than like big fantasies and big action books.
Yeah,
I think I've really like mellowed out.
I mean, sometimes you just want to, you know, chill. It's like the equivalent of putting on, you know, obviously you can't read a book in the background, but like putting on like a comfort watch in the background and like just letting the vibes wash over you, right?
Yeah. And our Discord member, Cherry, says, or Sherry, I'm sorry if I've like pronounced your name incorrectly. But they said it makes them want to run a bookshop. A friend of mine who works at a bookstore is lending me her advanced copy. And she says this is her dream bookstore, which begs the question, what are your, like, if you could open up a bookshop, like, what would it look like? I'm really curious to hear your thoughts. What about you, Marvin? What would be your ideal bookshop?
I mean, obviously, it would have books and boba. Because if I would open a bookshop, it would be a Books and Boba bookshop. I think I would love to just do like the UME thing where it's like, let's open a store that just features Asian diaspora authors and do events and just be a part of the community. The business model, of course, much like all independent bookstores, it's not the most ideal or profitable. But I think there's something to be said about creating a community hub, because I think that's something that we found through this podcast is there is a community of people who are interested in reading about Asian experiences and voices, or want a place where they can, you know, hear those experiences and perspectives. And we provide that in a digital space, but providing it in a physical space is also something that would be cool. I mean, obviously it won't be like the most profitable of businesses, but if we can figure out a way to, like, I think the key would be, much like the Hyunam-dong bookshop, having really dope drinks so that we both have book clientele and drink clientele at the same time. I'm with you, Rira. It sounds really hard. I don't know if
it is very hard. But like, some shout outs to bookstores that I love and also like would like to visit. One bookstore that I really want to visit when I go back to New York, other than You and Me, is the Book Club Bar in the East Village. And it's, their concept is a boozy book club shop. So it's open till midnight and people go to read and, you know, drink alcohol. And it is like a very like cozy place from what I have seen on social media. And I'm like, yeah, I would love to have like a place where I can be alone and nurse my whiskey sour and like not have my laptop open. Cause they also have a rule saying no laptops open past 6 p.m.
Sounds pretty good, actually. I'm like,
it sounds pretty great. Pretty great. The Ripped Bodice opened up a new branch in Brooklyn. Ripped Bodice is based here in LA, but they opened up their second location. And we've been to a couple events there. And it's a store that specializes in romance. And that's like, you know, it's been like really cool to see bookshops that specialize in like a very specific niche, because it means that there's like more bookshelf space for more diverse books. In my town, another bookshop opened recently. It's called Octavia's Bookshelf, and it focuses on BIPOC writers, specifically Black writers. So that's pretty great. But yeah, I'm curious as to hearing like what other bookshops you guys like or would like to visit in the future.
Yeah. Let us know your thoughts on Goodreads and our Discord server if you're a Patreon subscriber. We definitely love to keep this conversation going, because I definitely need, like, one thing that I love doing is visiting bookstores when I'm out traveling. So would love to get all your recommendations for future trips. But I guess,
yeah, I'm going to London soon, and there's a street on Covent Garden where it's just like a street filled with bookshops, and I'm like, I need to just go visit, because that sounds really cool. And for our Patreon members, we have an episode with Lily Rugo, who's been a former guest on the show. For book discussions, she is a bookseller at Harvard Bookstore, and we talked to her about what it's like to be a bookseller and what her daily tasks are, and what are the perks and what are the downsides.
Yeah.
And you kind of learn from reading this book. But, you know, like we said, this is an ideal bookshop. So if you want to learn more about like what it's like to work at a real bookshop, you know, if you're a Patreon member, go listen to that episode.
Yeah. I guess with that, that'll do it for a discussion of Welcome to the Hyunam-dong Bookshop by Hwang Bo-rum, translated by Shana Tan. One thing that was interesting was in her bio, Shana Tan was mentored by Anton Her, who we had on our podcast previous. So kind of cool to see that like translator community carry on through our book club. Like we mentioned, if you have thoughts about our discussion or your own thoughts on bookstores, please let us know on our Discord server or on Goodreads. We always love to hear your feedback. All right, before we go, it's time to announce our book club pick for the month of April 2024. And this is an audience pick. So we did poll our Honey Boba Patreon members to ask them for their book recommendations and chose a book from there. So Rira, what are we reading?
We are reading, drum roll please, we are reading Yellow Face by R.F. Kuang.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I know we just read Babel a year ago, but this is a book that has been on both of our TBR lists. And as
also people constantly ask me, like, what do you think about Yellow Face? And I'm like, I haven't read it yet, guys.
Yeah, like we mentioned early on this podcast, we read a lot of books now for this podcast. So the best way for us to get to books that we want to read is to honestly make ourselves do it through this book club. Thank you to Patreon member Couple Jen for submitting this book. We had a lot of really great recommendations, but this definitely was a book that was like just we've been looking for a
reason to read it.
Yeah. And so thank you for providing that for us.
Like the reason why we've kind of like hesitated to have it as a book club pick is because we've read Babel by R.F. Kuang. And of course, like we want to have room to bring in new, new authors that we haven't really talked about or like, you know, featured on the show. But I feel like Yellowface is like so tailored to like our our mission as a show that we kind of have to review it at some point. And I thought about us like discussing it on a Patreon episode, but I feel like with us talking about it in like a regular episode, it'll have a better reach and, yeah, you know, get more comments from our listeners who have already read the book. Because if you have been living under a rock or something, this book has been super popular outside the Asian American community as well. It's reached New York Times bestseller. It's been like a bunch of book club picks. And yeah.
And I feel like it's just such a great follow up to
Babel,
this cozy book about bookselling, right?
Yeah. But for those of you who do not know what Yellow Face is about, it's it's pretty much about a white author who takes on an Asian name after her Asian BFF dies and leaves behind this manuscript. And she takes the manuscript and kind of like makes it her own thing. That's kind of the gist of it, I think.
Yeah. And it definitely, it's a send up of like, you know, R.F. Kuang, not one to hold back when criticizing capitalism. And this book is kind of her send up to the publishing industry. And I'm really excited to get into it.
Also, I heard from the grapevine that a lot of the book tea in Yellowface like happened for real. And as people who cover book tea on our news episodes, I wonder how many will like know the references to.
Yeah. So as always, read along with us. We'll be discussing this book at the end of April. If you have already finished the book and have thoughts, please let us know either on our Goodreads forums or on our Discord server if you are a Patreon subscriber. We'd love to include your feedback in our future discussion episodes as well. But with that, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu, and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Hello, I'm Phil Yu, and I'm the host of All the Asians on Star Trek, the podcast in which I interview all the Asians on Star Trek. I'm talking to actors, writers, directors, stunt people, background extras. You know, all the Asians on Star Trek. Find out more at alltheasiansonstartrek.com. Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective. Live long and prosper.